products to anybody looking for a computer that can do things in the middle of the night next to their partner in bed.
Great. Ringing endorsement.
Yeah.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. It's two decades too late. I'm Brad. This is Josh.
What's up, everybody?
Yeah. Can we leave that in?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool.
I got a Buick ad coming up next, so I'm just going to pepper them in. They were desperate.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, could you imagine? Like, we saw you had 30 people listening to your podcast. We didn't do a Buick ad.
Yes.
But yeah, this is the podcast where we listen to albums that are mostly metal for whatever it's worth that are turning 20 years old. We have certain criteria that we rate them on, 1 through 5, 4 different criteria in total, with a maximum of 20 from each of us, with a maximum of 40 total. So welcome in. This week we have Converge, You Fail Me.
And they sure did. And that's the end of the episode.
See you later, guys. Have a good new year. Or wait.
No, it was New Year.
No, this already is. This was New Year. Yeah, have a good.
It's got to be your bowl.
Fourth week of the year.
Yeah.
So, before you get into your things, there's something I'd really like to address up front with this album. A couple things, actually. One, that when I'm learning that when I listen to some things at a high level and don't like them, I then end up liking them once I have to do the deep dive portion or like the track by track breakdown that I do for the podcast.
For sure.
And that was the case here. I hated it. Didn't like absolute transparency. I tried talking Josh out of doing this one.
That's the BTS on this episode.
Yeah. And like he made the good point that maybe it would be good for us to review an album that we both don't like. Well, I guess I can't really do that now. I mean, it's not like the best thing, but I ended up liking it once I got into like the nitty-gritty of it. But the main thing I wanted to say is I really wish I would have listened to these dudes as it was happening. Mm-hmm. So rather than thinking all of the time, like, man, this sounds like Every Time I Die, instead...
Right.
And rightfully so, it would be, man, Every Time I Die sounds like this. Because there are parts that are just, I mean, Every Time I Die ripped their shit off pretty hard. At
I had that in my notes. Like, oh, this sounds like Every Time I Die. And then I was like, no, it probably doesn't. Every Time I Die probably sounds like this.
Every Time I Die did like a mini documentary thing for... forget what album it was, like 2 albums ago 3 albums ago, and they recorded it with Kurt Ballou, the guitar player from Converge, because he records a lot of people. He's kind of like the other side of the Will Putney coin. But and they were talking about it, and he was like, Andy from Every Time I Die was like, dude, one time, like, we were playing a show with you guys, and, like, you heard it, and after the show, you're like, yeah, that was really cool back when we did it. And Kurt was like, man, I don't ever remember saying that, and if I did, I am so sorry. That is such a dick move. And Andy was like, dude, I didn't even get mad about it, because it was,
yeah, it was true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was definitely true.
So part of the reason I convinced us to soldier on with this album was because of Converge's long history. They're always kind of one of those bands you hear cited as an influence, you know, just largely impactful. 20 years ago, I never understood why, because I didn't really care for them. I didn't care for what I tried to listen to, but they got started in Salem, Massachusetts, so part of that New England metal and hardcore scene in a big way.
Yep. Honestly, them probably, to a large extent, kicking a lot of that off.
Yeah, most likely. I mean, they formed in 1990, so at this release, Jesus, they were active for 14 years. Compare that to
that's bananas.
a couple of the recent albums we listened to, where it's like, oh, they got signed the very next day they formed. So
yeah, well, it's also too, like, you get those bands like Aftershock and Overcast that eventually mm-hmm. became Shadows Fall and Killswitch. It's like, I guess maybe the band they ended up in wasn't active for very long, but whereas Converge was just Converge the whole time.
Yeah,
which is crazy.
Super crazy to me. This is still the same lineup. This is their current lineup as the people who recorded this album. So it's Jacob Bannon, vocals and lyricist, Kurt Ballou, as you mentioned, guitars, vocals, bass guitar, keyboard, percussion. So he does a lot of the heavy lifting on these. He did quite a, but he had a hand in the engineering of it too. Nate Newton on bass and vocals, and then Ben Kohler on drums and percussion.
Collar, yeah.
Yeah. So
yeah, I mean, they had like some, I guess they had a couple changes to the drums and one on the, or two on mm-hmm. the bass or whatever it is. But I mean, by and large, you're talking about since like 1998. Ish 99 yeah. Like, you just had the same. And dude, Ben Kohler is awesome. He does all the, like,
phenomenal,
not all, but he does a lot of the 2 minutes to late night, like, covers.
Oh,
and
sick.
All that stuff, that's a lot of, that's him. And I honestly, he just seems like a really cool fucking dude on top of being one of the most hyper insane
yeah
drummers. He's another like animal from the Muppets type. Just a little more composed. He's not quite as much of a mess as the dude from the Darkest Hour album was.
Right.
His seems to have a little more of a focus and a point rather than just
right.
flailing wildly.
I'd put him like on Justin Foley, Blood Has Been Shed, maybe even a little above. I almost told you, like, I understand that the vocals are hard to get through. It's hard to get into this album. Start with the drumming. If you can focus on what the drums are doing, then follow the guitar, then the bass, and then you can kind of see that the vocals get layered in a moderately effective way.
And I remember watching the 2003 Metal and Hardcore Fest DVD that we watched just to death, which I recently reordered.
Nice.
So I have that now. Yeah.
Sick.
Ever since we started doing this, it was brought up like the third time, and I got it on Amazon, and it was like, I don't know, like, here's $5, please take this out of our warehouse sort of situation. I just remember even thinking when we watched Converge in that, thinking like, this guy's vocals are terrible. Like,
yeah,
because it sounds like he's dying, and not in a
it does.
Good way, which it can be, I guess. It's just, but as I got into it and got used to it, I understood how it did all fit together for the most part. I mean, I'd rather he just did the high scream thing, because when
right.
he tries branching out, it's not cute.
No.
It is not cute. But that's okay. I get it. You got to be an artist and you got to do your thing. So no, you know, I'm not mad about it. It's just
definitely a lot of saliva in the throat on some of those vocals.
Yeah. And so this is around the time too when that one woman that came out with the How to Scream thing, and like Corey Taylor took her course, Keith Buckley took her course, and all those dudes got like trained by her. This is around, I want to say the year it came out was 2004, because I know Eric got it. But
okay,
I am going to listen to later Converge albums to see how that kind of panned out, if he evolved in any way. But yeah, it's the worst part of the album is his vocals. His patterns are cool, his lyrics are cool, he tells really cool stories. I know he gives a hell of a show, so there's a lot, there's more upside than downside, but sucks that the downside is kind of the whole thing.
Yeah,
it's like,
it's funny, one of the reviews from Sputnik said at times his words are even decipherable. Like, yeah, like sometimes you can hear like the name of the song or like a couple of the lyrics that are telling part of a story, but in a large part the vocals kind of detract on a first listen. On a first listen, for sure.
Yes, it got, the more I listened to it, I just had to get used to it. It just sounds, it's really easy just to say, man, this dude sucks at vocals, and
right,
it's not entirely true. But yeah, that was my initial reaction.
Because if you listen to it, like, you think it's very reminiscent sounding of somebody's first album, which, as we've mentioned, this is very much not. They've been active for 14 years. They had four prior releases to this, the most notable of which being Jane Doe, released in 2001, which kind of, like, that was their big skyrocket album. And this had to follow this up in some meaningful way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's good. Like, I think we talked about it before. I've listened to Jane Doe and I didn't really like it. But now I feel like I need to give it like the same treatment I gave this, so I can try to find the beauty in it. 'Cause I'm sure it's there. But yeah, I mean, Jane Doe flipped metalcore on its head. I mean, like, the whole metal hardcore scene in that area, which is where it all came from. That's our, again, our Tampa Bay thrash, our generation's Tampa Bay thrash scene, or the, you know, what is the wave of British, whatever that is in the
British
80s?
The British invasion? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember what it's called. Yeah, this is our generation's
Beatlemania.
Yeah, they just had a lot. They were, they had to have just been a gigantic part of it. Which is crazy. Oh,
for sure. This album even met with some critical success. So it hit 171 on the Billboard 200. Hit 12 on the Top Heat Seekers chart, 16 on the Independent Albums chart. So, like, you know, as much as we didn't really listen to Converge at the time, they had a huge following and had for a number of years.
Yeah. No, we were in the minority for that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'd say
for sure. I mean, pretty much everyone around us was liked it. Like, we were kind of in a vacuum, which is kind of odd to think about now.
But super odd.
Yeah. Strange. Yeah, so, like, we kind of said up top, I already pointed out the whole Every Time I Die thing because I think it's fair. And I know on the As I Lay Dying episode that you had brought up in some of the reviews that they were making comparisons between Converge parts. I don't hear that at all. In no way, shape, or form do I hear any of that. Like, I hear As I Lay Dying trying their best guesstimation to try to replicate something that maybe Converge is doing, but I don't think they're alike in any way, shape, or form. I think,
yeah,
and again, you take your influences, you put them in a blender, and you do with it what you're able to do with it. So maybe there was a little bit of that, but I don't hear the, just because you're playing something dissonant doesn't mean you're doing what Converge is doing. It's on a whole another level.
Yeah. I didn't get much As I Lay Dying. I definitely got the Every Time I Die. I even got, like, a little bit of Poison the Well. You could see some influences from them. Or vice versa, I should say.
Vice versa, probably, yeah. I mean, Poison the Well is really old, too, but...
That's true.
I mean, the only band that I could say that I'm not going to say they sound like one or the other because they're so contemporary is Zayo, because I heard a lot of similarities there.
Yeah.
But Zayo started in, like, 1990 also or something. I'm sure I'm, like, off a little bit on that.
Not much.
But, yeah, they've been around. They were kind of going at the same time. Yeah, 1993. So, yeah. So I heard Zayo a lot while listening to it, but I had to make the mental note that they probably were playing off of each other, or at least they had similar influences beforehand.
Yeah.
Whatever that might be. So I wouldn't say either one of them was pulling it from the other, but Every Time I Die rips them off so much.
Really
it's
bad.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's funny. Man, it's crazy. Yeah. Also, I know we've taught, Converge has been brought up a weird amount on this podcast. And I'm sure that I've put my foot in my mouth in comparison to how I feel about this right now. So,
yeah.
I hope that's true and entertaining for somebody. I hope someone is like, you piece of shit, you said the exact opposite of that like 4 weeks ago.
Yeah. Whatever. People change.
I'm going to do that a lot. Yep. Yeah, I'm going to do that a lot. I do that about everything.
We're basically scientists. You know, we take the evidence that we have at the time and form opinions based on the body of work. And then once we, you know, see further evidence or get educated, we change our opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Anyway, I hope someone gets to make fun of me for it, though. I'm sure that's fun.
I'm sure they will, yeah. I hope I get to read it, like, on the Instagram comments or something.
Yeah, that would be good. That would be good. How into reviews did you get? Were they pretty favorable?
They are extremely favorable, yeah. On the level of Pig Destroyer, like, 9 out of 10. Lamb Goat said, it's a work of art that is both immediately accessible and delicately nuanced, which... I don't know about immediately accessible at all, but delicately nuanced, I get.
Yeah, that's very well said, but immediate, no, I mean.
Yeah, no. You're not just diving into this and being like, this is art.
Yeah, I don't. For who? Like,
yeah.
It wasn't even immediately accessible for me, and I listened to this shit.
Right.
Like, I can imagine showing this to, like, my mom. And her being like, you know what? I get it. Like, right from the get-go. Yeah, that's funny. It is very good.
Yeah. All Music, 4.5 out of 5. Reviewer review, 4.5 out of 5. User review, the Sputnik review gave it a 4 out of 5. So, like, definitely widely favorable. And I'm sure a lot of that is, one, in the album's own right, but two, because it's so closely on the heels of Jane Doe. So much so that they were writing this album while they were doing sound checks touring for Jane Doe. So, like,
wow.
You can see a lot of the influence there, and you can also see some of the, like, we want to do something different and not just make Jane Doe Volume 2.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've listened to Jane Doe, and this is, even with what little I know about it, this is clearly a step forward artistically. Mm-hmm. There's really no doubt about it.
I agree.
Oh, that's pretty rad. Man, those are some good reviews. Good job, guys.
They are some good reviews. And special little tidbit, if you want to try this album out and you're having a hard time making it past the vocals, there's a Redux version that's a remix and remaster where Kurt Ballou redid the whole thing. It makes the vocals just instantly more palatable.
It does. I'm not going to get too into the Redux right now because I will talk about that when we get to the production, I feel.
Sick.
Because it caused kind of, it paradoxically, maybe not, it hurt it for me. Like the fact that it, you know what? I don't know how many notes you have on Converge, but I mean, we could totally get to the review.
I think we can get to the review.
Let's do it.
Review! Sick.
So,
Brad clapped.
Yes, I did. Because there's probably a better way to do the things we're doing, and I don't know what they are. So what did you think of the artwork on this album?
I gave the artwork on this here album a 5. I love it as a graphic. It's totally my aesthetic, my kind of subject matter. It was done by Jacob Bannon. So, mm-hmm. You know, I always love when a band member has, like, part in the creation of the whole look and feel of an album. So
agreed.
I love it. I think it symbolizes the meaning of the record. It kind of gives you, it's got this feel that complements the sound of the album very well. So I gave it a 5.
Yeah, I don't really have a lot to add to that. I ended up on a 4.
Okay.
But for really basically the same reasons, I don't know how to describe so I initially started at a 5, but do you remember the clothing brand back then called Atticus?
Yeah.
It reminded me too much of that, and for some reason, that made me drop it to a 4. No other reason. So,
awesome.
There's no objectivity in that in any way, shape, or form. It just, because it's great. It really is great. It totally... As soon as you start listening, you know that artwork had to be exactly what it is There's no other way around it.
Right. Who started that? Was that Blink 182 or was it Alkaline Trio? Who? It was one of those Atticus type of bands.
Atticus Clothing has a Wikipedia.
Sweet.
Founded in 2001 by Blink 182 members Mark Hoppus and Thomas DeLonge.
There you go.
Hmm.
I can see. Well, I can't done. See why you downgraded it, but I know why you downgraded it because of that.
Yeah, I know. This is a 100% me thing. There's no way around it because I cannot explain it. It shouldn't matter at all. But
yeah,
that was it. That was just enough for me. I was like, hey, you're getting a 4.
Interestingly stupid enough, clothing brand. On the Redux, they just flip, they invert the image black and white, and I like it less. I like it better as white graphic on a black field.
I actually agree, because I looked at it too, and I like the original much more. Actually, you know what, though? Good segue, because I think the Redux matters a little bit in this section, but what did you think of the production then versus now?
Tell me your thoughts first.
So, I think there are things within the production that you could see as bad or not polished, but I personally, rather than finding it to be that way, I find it to just be Kurt Ballou's kind of signature.
Mm-hmm.
He's very he's purposeful when there is feedback, whereas, like, you know, that could easily be just a mistake, or you're standing too close to your amp, or whoever's right. producing you isn't paying attention. But I know that's not what he's doing.
He's using it as another instrument. Yeah,
exactly. He gets just the most insane guitar tone. Like, he makes his own pedals. Like, and the dude's like a mad scientist when it comes to this kind of shit. The bass tone is just, I mean, it's incredible.
It is really good.
Fucking so good. It's another person that at a time where this is going to get brought up. I mean, it's going to get brought up until, like, we get to 2008 or so, if we ever should get that far, when people started actually putting bass back in mixes again, which is why all those metalcore albums from that time period have since been remixed and remastered. I actually think this one needed it the least out of most of them.
I agree.
Like, yeah, like, if you go listen to, what is it, Messengers? Not Messengers. The August Burns Red album, is that the one with the candle on the front?
It is, yeah.
The original version of that is unlistenable. I mean, it just sounds like a tin can, and then they remix and remastered it. It sounds great. They didn't re-record it, but the remix remaster has bass. Some of the stuff you can't take away, like, his cymbals are still just piercing. But, like,
yeah,
I don't find any of that here. I think it's another person who knows how to produce music in a way that isn't just beholden to a specific time. The problem is the Redux. So, if I'm judging something then versus now, and then I listen to a version of the same album, remixed and remastered, at a later date, and it is objectively better,
right,
I have to ding it for the now part. If they didn't make the Redux, or if I didn't listen to it, I mean, you're basically proving to me that now it's out of date, because you redid it in a way that's less out of date. So if they didn't make that, I probably would have, like, I might have landed on a 5 on this, because I think every part of it, they do a lot of good layering. The tones are really good. They vary depending on the part. Like, he's not just making the same guitar tone through and through. And yeah, his voice sounds like shit sometimes, but it's like, it fits the aesthetic of the album.
Right.
So yeah, it's kind of funny. I almost wish the Redux didn't exist, because I think I would be able to, like, I don't know, I would be able to give it a higher score for the now part if I didn't know that they literally proved that it's worse.
That's fair.
In a strange way. So I ended up on a 3.
Okay. I am also at a 3. And I'm at a 3 for a lot of those same reasons. Also because I rated this, like, the first time I listened to it. So
yeah, fair.
But so part of the reason they did the Redux, they had somebody else come in. This was their first release on Epitaph. Epitaph.
Oh, okay.
And so they had somebody come in who was supposed to do a lot of the production, but it was basically a comedy of errors on how it was produced. Like, there was rolling blackouts during the time that this was getting mixed. Like, he was flying in somewhere else. So he had to like cram it all into like a day and a half with power outages all along the way. Kurt wow. Ballou wasn't entirely involved in the process because this other guy was. So the Redux was actually done, like, he was just never satisfied with how the sound got captured at the time. So that's why he himself redid it all for the Redux. So, like, but to your point, yes, it happened later and it was done better. You know, could it have been different at the time? I don't know, because it wasn't.
You're exactly right, though, and it sucks because, like, yeah. I mean, I guess that's cool when you're a good producer and you recorded the whole thing at your own personal studio, so I'm sure it's easy to, like, go back a couple years later and figure it out. But, like, again, it's just, it almost sucks that it exists. It is better, by the way, people. If you don't like the original and you really want to give it a full try, I would say try, like, making it through. It's rewarding. But if you can't, if you absolutely can't, believe me, I didn't think I could, so I get it.
Right.
The Redux is very, very good.
That is very
good. It sounds way better.
I actually think, if I remember correctly, this was the last album that Kurt didn't fully produce himself.
Well, good, because he's better for it. Yeah.
Right. Better at it.
That's kind of a waste. Like, I saw he was listed as number one under the production, so I guess I kind of assumed, but, like, yeah. Good.
Oh, look, it's all here in the wiki page if you're so inclined to go check it out. It was an interview with Noisy. Blue kind of explains the circumstances under which it he felt it happened.
That's sick. Man, what a weird situation.
That's super weird.
A lot of things to go wrong.
But also, like, not untypical of bands of this genre being, you know, on shoestring budgets, even really seemingly successful or impactful ones, being in circumstances to where they have to just cram a bunch of recording into things. And the fact that anyone can release a quality product the way that they do is beyond me.
Well, it's funny because, like, this, I guess let's make the connection even harder, but Every Time I Die, they recorded Low Teens or From Parts Unknown, and that was the one with the documentary, I believe. But From Parts Unknown, they recorded it with Kurt Ballou at God City, and Keith Buckley got sick and he recorded all of his vocals in like one day.
Nice.
So yeah, there's a lot of that. That production is excellent.
Is that the DVD where he stole the empty box of medicine because somebody else had already stolen the medicine out of the box?
Oh, shit, I don't remember that part. Maybe, though.
Hilarious.
It would make sense.
Hilarious little bit. He's talking about, like, the name brand versus the off brand, and he's like, yeah, but I didn't have money for the name brand, but I knew it worked better, so I just stole it. And I get outside and I open the box and it's empty because somebody else had already stolen it.
Man, that's fucking brilliant. It's hilarious. I don't remember that. Okay, that'll be the rest of my day, probably, trying to find that.
You're welcome.
Thanks. All right. Let's go
with Impact at the Time, though.
Impact at the Time. I feel like I'm doing this a lot. I can't give it a one because Every Time I Die impacted us so hard.
Right.
And Every Time I Die doesn't do Every Time I Die things unless Converge does Converge things.
Right. Give it a tangential two.
Well, that's the thing. It's the tangential part. It's like, that's a constant here, it seems. Like, we're finding things that we weren't into at the time, but it's impossible to say that it couldn't have impacted us because it almost had to, just not directly. I almost want to say this gets bumped to a 3 in a strain. Normally it's a 2, that's because I don't want to give it a 1, but every time I die is like a carbon copy at times of, like, every time I die, just learned how to be catchy quicker and started adding like that stuff. And Keith Buckley is like a very good singer and all of those things that I don't know if Converge was capable of at the time or wanted to do, by the way. I have no idea.
That's right.
And so they were more, they had all of that stuff, but they went like the catchy route.
Right.
But at the same time, they were 75% Converge ripoff. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so I think I'm going to go 3. I mean, I think that might be pushing it a little, and maybe 2 is more appropriate, but I just can't overstate how much Every Time I Die meant. And if that's what I, if I'm going to constantly say they ripped them off, then thanks, Converge.
That's what That's what, kind of what you got to go with.
Yeah.
I feel bad for doing this, and for all those reasons you just explained, but I'm going to give it a 1 because even Every Time I Die wasn't super impactful on me at the time. I preferred the more melodic bands. And like, I just straight up, I would have told you at the time, like, no, I don't like Converge. They suck.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
Yeah.
But that's who I was then.
It is what it is. I get it. Because, like, I was, like, at the time, though, like, because, I mean, Hot Damn impacted us a lot.
Yeah.
And I was then trying to write shit like that, and I really couldn't, like.
That's true.
But I was trying, I'm like, and so I don't know. It didn't land very often. All right, fair enough. No, I don't, no argument, though. I could just as easily as given it a 1. I just, like, I kept hearing exact shit, like, this isn't just, like, they didn't just influence a lot of the bands I listened to. Like, they stole shit from them. So, yeah, no, but totally fair. Well, and this one's based on the score so far. This is, I don't know, this could be interesting, but how much did you enjoy listening to it today?
I gave it a 4. I mean, like, every subsequent 2 listens for this deep dive, like, it just got better and better for me. So the first listen was god awful. I rated it a 1 straight out of the box, like, you know, fuck this shoot. But like, the more I listened to it, the more I dug in, the more it just kind of sticks with you. Like, there's a lot to like about it. So, you know, there's some straight up like thrash hardcore beats in there. There's some like southern rock riffs. Like, it's got everything that you would want to listen to. And I'm like, if you can, you know, settle into the vocals, because they do complement the overall album in a weird way that I don't like, but I gave it 4.
Yeah. Exactly the same. I give it a 4 as well. I went from hating it to enjoying pretty much. I mean, I love everything about it. They're another band, which we didn't get too much into the track breakdowns on this one. We went to the review pretty quick. That's on me. But I figured, you know, we can talk about that a little bit now since we're going to talk about our favorite track anyway.
Yeah, there's not a lot to say about the individual tracks, and I don't think.
No, I will say I think the order is well done. I think it flows pretty well. Yeah. I think it seems purposeful. I think this is a band, and I think who did I say this about before? I know I said it about somebody, but this is a band for me that when they're under the 3-minute mark, they're at their best. I can see what they're trying to do with like You Fail Me and In Her Shadow.
Yeah.
I do appreciate the changes of pace, and I think they came at good times in the album.
Agreed.
They just do the long stuff a little long at times. It is another situation, though, where the drummer keeps it interesting, so it doesn't get too boring.
Right.
Even when it could. It could be long in the tooth at times, but it tends not to be necessarily. In Her Shadow specifically, though, like, I love the start. It sounds like a straight-up Western, like, spaghetti-like film from the, you know, 60s
that
or whatever.
One was super Poison the Well for me. Like, that's where I made that connection.
Yep, I could see that. I don't think his voice what he's doing is not good in this. And yeah. I don't think this is one of the tracks that I think he is almost to its detriment a little bit. Cause he's trying to do stuff that I mean, he couldn't do his high screaming over it. I know that. I guess I don't know what else he was supposed to try to do, but right. I don't think it was particularly successful. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I will say there, if you go back and listen to the, or if you did listen to the Pig Destroyer album, they did a good job of, I never really got bored.
Yeah. And right.
That's not easy to do.
No. You Fail Me was like the only time on this album that I felt myself like, okay, this is getting a little long in the tooth.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I like that it's totally different. I do like that. But I don't know. Yeah.
So what was your favorite song? What ended up being your favorite song?
My favorite song is Death King, track 10.
Oh, okay.
2 minutes, 7 seconds. Shred Your Face. It's kind of got a breakdown that's really heavy because Kurt Ballou's insane Crush Your Fucking Skull guitar tone. Like, though, I mean, I had all the ones that I was trying to choose between, like Black Cloud was another one that was a possible favorite. Heartless was another one. Again, for them, they are best under 3 minutes. And so
right.
I gravitated toward those for the most part.
Yeah.
What about you?
So, like, if you put in a bag of popcorn and you put on a song, like, you don't want that shit to come out burnt. So, like, keep it under right. 3 minutes, folks.
Yep.
I don't know.
Not like, stupid. It's something. I mean, it could be worse. It could be worse.
True.
I've made worse analogies on this podcast so far, no doubt about it. We're hypothetical?
My favorite song was Dropout. I thought it was very Every Time I Die, maybe some like melodic Misery Signals action. Just it caught my ear differently where it is in the album than some of yeah. the preceding or following songs. And I really just love the guitar riff in it and the way it kind of just permeates through the end of the song. I think it's super well done, you know, catchy enough for you to like mm-hmm. latch on to. And just
yeah.
kind of that was my favorite. If I was going to tell somebody to listen to one song on this one, it wouldn't be that one, actually. It would be Eagles Become Vultures, but Dropout was my favorite.
It's funny, because I would also say listen to Eagles Become Vultures. That's very funny.
Yeah.
And actually, I missed it, but I had Dropout as a possible favorite, too. The bridge, again, with music like this, I don't know. Maybe it's a bridge. Maybe you would call it a bridge. I have no idea. After, like, the vocals are isolated, it's so sick. And then, like, that riff at the end, like, Fall of Troy must have heard and said, we can make our entire sound out of that. We can just do that all the time. So, no, I agree. It's super good. Very good choice. It's funny. It's like every song under 3 minutes except the intro I put as a possible favorite now that I'm looking
through
it.
Yeah. So, yeah. Keep it under 3 minutes, folks.
Yep.
That's just good advice all around.
I guess so. I mean, not all bands, obviously, but it's just another Pig Destroyer thing. It's weird that you can do so much in such a short amount of time and cover so much ground. Yeah. But, you know, I think the main takeaway for me on this is don't sometimes judge a book by its cover. And this was a very good example of that for me, of literally hating it and texting you saying, please, can we not do this on the show?
Right.
To going like, this is really good.
It's really pretty good.
And it is.
Again, I don't think it'll make it in my regular rotation, but it might pop into my head. I'll be like, if it pops up, it'd be like, hey, you haven't listened to this in a while. I'll be like, you know what? You're right. Let's throw it on.
Yeah, I could see it. I'm with you.
All right. So I guess So
to the
with
point,
that,
guys.
Yeah. I guess with that, he's been Brad. I've been Josh, and we've been 2 decades too late. Here you go.